welcome everyone to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett, and we are here for your SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired on June the 22nd, 2012. Jake and I get together just about every week and do this audio review, even if both of us don't watch the show live that night and do a report. We usually get together on these Saturdays and do this audio, break down the show from start to finish, look at all the news and anything special coming out of it. But guess what? It's not the only audio that's done each week here on the .NET site. We do a ton of audio, but it is almost exclusively for our members. Jake and I do this All Access, but the Raw, the WWE Raw audio review is not All Access. Neither is the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Jake and Will Pruitt get together every week on Wednesday, usually for the .NET Countdown, where they look at the top and the best and the worst in professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where members can ask questions both for wrestling and non-wrestling topics. I do a weekly audio slant that's a little bit of everything. This past week I interviewed Patrick Wright, who was a promoter for a local indie group, getting ready to do their first high pay-per-view. Week before that I told a story about working at an indie show and some of the travesties that happened there. So it's a little bit of everything. And then Jason Powell and I get together every week for .NET Weekly. It's our flagship show. We review the news of the week, often break news that's not even made its way to the site yet. And those audios come each and every week from all the entire group here. But again, that's for our members. So if you're liking what you hear today and you want to check out some of these other audios, please head on over to ProWrestling.net. Sign up to be a .NET member. $7.50 a month will get you the first 30 days. If you like it after that, or if you already know that this is it, you're taking the plunge, $5.50 a month. Save you $2 if you take the annual option. And with Brock Lesnar coming back for SummerSlam, more than likely, and things like that, there'll probably be a lot of discussion, a lot of things to learn as we see what's going on with his deal and exactly how much trouble he may or may not be in from the UFC event and all of that. It's a great time to join and be a .NET member. Let's bring in Jake right now. We talk about this SmackDown. Again, it aired on June the 22nd, 2012, and taped on June the 19th in Baltimore, Maryland. And, wow, Jake, I mean, if nothing else, I can say that Baltimore was happy that SmackDown was there. This was a hot crowd.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they definitely seemed to react to just about everything. I mean, there were a few times where you know, whatever was going on in the ring kind of put them to sleep. But for the most part, any of the major characters that appeared seemed to get great reactions overall.
Yeah, the Del Rio versus Christian match that we'll talk about got some great reactions from the crowd. The main event got great reactions from the crowd. The opening segment got great reactions from the crowd. And we'll take the whole show apart from start to finish, but I do want to pull the opening segment out a little bit on its own real fast and just say, Big Show announced that he was going to be in the Money in the Bank match at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. He said, "I am entering the Money in the Bank match," and then he talked about going for the WWE Championship. But I did not hear, and I've got a lot of emails today pointing out that he did say WWE Championship, and that's great. But I did not hear either from him or from the announcers how many matches. They never said he is the first entrant in the Raw match. They just said he's the first entrant, and he's talking about going for WWE Championship. So I'll just, ask you out of the gate, do you think there's one or two Money in the Bank matches this year? What do you think they should do considering the Super Show setup that they have going on now?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question because they've, all but abandoned the brand split at this point, what they do. I think Big Show did say that he was entering into the Money in the Bank match for the WWE title. I don't know if we're, if we're even supposed to read into that or not, whether, that means that there's going to be another match for the World Heavyweight Championship or what's going to happen. But I would assume that that's what we're going to see, is we're going to have two Money in the Bank matches, one for each title. And, maybe people can enter in whatever one they want. I mean, it doesn't seem like anybody is restricted at this point, to whatever show they can or can't appear on. The only thing that was happening there briefly was Brodus Clay was pulled from Raw basically by John Laurinaitis, but I think that's pretty well over now. So we'll have to see, what they decide to do on television. But as of this point, there is really no indication from at least this opening segment what we're going to see other than Show going after the WWE title.
What do you think they should do? Do you think they should have one big star-studded Money in the Bank, or should they have two Money in the Banks like they've had for the past few years?
I think it would make sense, you know, for them to pare it down to one if they can. I mean, then they can add more competitors and make it a longer match. Or, you know, maybe they have two briefcases hanging above the ring. And, you know, the guy can grab whichever one he wants for each title. I don't know. They can do something innovative with it. But it doesn't seem like they, you know, with all the injuries and suspensions and whatnot they have going on, it doesn't seem like they could put two matches together that, you know, without, you know, reaching pretty far down the card. And I'm not sure they're going to get the reaction they want by, you know, putting people in matches that nobody expects them to win or nobody expects them to have a chance. So I would do the one star study match. Yeah.
And you made the point about the roster. Even Jason and I thought about that. Got that weekly this week. The roster is so depleted. If you're going to do five guys in each match, I mean, really, can you name 10 stars? I mean, you're going to have title matches, so you're going to have guys probably, you know, involved in the title matches that are not involved with the actual ladder matches themselves. So, you know, you take, you know, another 4-5 people out of the mix and say, you know, what, can you name me 10 people now that are eligible that we can put in two different matches? And you go, wow, I don't know that I can. Like I said, without having, you know, a Zack Ryder in there or whatever. And that's fine. I mean, I'm sure they did. They put Sin Cara in last year, I guess it was. So, I mean, they can make some ridiculous moves in that sense and get away with it. But I think it's probably the most interesting question right now is, are they going to have one or are they going to have two? If they have, you know, two, is Cena going to be in one? Or whether they have one or two or not, is Cena going to be in one? Is he going to, you know, wrestle somebody else? Who's he going to work with if Big Show was moved on to Money in the Bank? A ton of questions right now out there that they're waiting to be answered. And I think we're interested in the sense of wanting to know, but it's not like it's going to drive people to television yet, you know, because to see who John Cena is going to work with. I mean, I don't think he draws money like that. I think you put it with someone and people just rally behind it because they love it. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Money in the Bank. There's a lot of, they're in a special situation right now where they just, like you said, the injuries and the suspensions left the roster really weak. They're not moving guys up. They've got them locked into this NXT thing, which, as a totally side note, if you haven't seen it this week, folks, find it on the internet. It's out there on YouTube and a few other places, and it's really worth seeing. There's some great talent down there, and that show felt new and edgy, and even if it wasn't, you know, mind-blowing or anything like that. It felt like a cooler product than anything we've seen on WWE this week. But anyway, I'm off on a rant here. We'll try to we'll focus back in now, start this thing from the top. We've got our traditional opening video and pyro. Josh Matthews, Booker T, and Michael Cole checking in on commentary. They hype Daniel Bryan versus Kane and Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler for later. Just real quick before we move on, Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler, were you looking forward to this match? It's the third time we've seen him, I think, in 10 days. Did you think they were going to give us another good match, or did you think it was going to be a 5-minute rush job?
You know, I do expect them to give us a good match, you know, pretty much every time they're out there. I think, you know, they're both talented, and I think they both have enough pride in their work to go out there and at least give, you know, the fans a good effort every night. So I expected the match to be very good. I wasn't necessarily excited about it. I mean, it's tough to, you know, to watch the same match, you know, 2-3 weeks in a row when, you know, the outcome seems pretty well determined before they get in the ring. I had the same kind of reaction to Bryan and Kane. You know, even though I liked the match and, you know, the finish was kind of fun, it's just tough to get up for, you know, for things that we've seen so frequently, so recently.
Yeah. That's fair. I figured they wouldn't give him much time. I figured they'd make him rush through. I figured they'd have some sort of messy ending. And we didn't get all that. So just here at this point when I saw it, I was like, oh, God, I've forgotten. Oh, well, it should be okay. Teddy Long danced out onto the stage and announced that John Laurinaitis had been fired. He then announced that Mick Foley was the GM for the night and started to hype something else, but Big Show's music cut him off. Show stares him down, and Teddy Long heads to the back. So it's John Laurinaitis is gone and Teddy Long is still getting cheered, but he doesn't seem to have any power. He's still being kind of punked out, at least for now. Joe comes all the way to the ring. He cuts a promo, says he could not care less about Johnny, about the fact that Laurinaitis got fired. He said that he didn't care about Laurinaitis, the fans, or anyone. He only cared about himself and not the yuck, yuck, I'll do whatever you say. Yes, sir, self, the real self. That's who he cares. The real me is how he put it. He congratulated John Cena for using, for being able to defeat him after five of his cronies got involved, is how he put it. He said, let's be fair, we all know, in a one-on-one fight, I would crush John Cena. And Baltimore apparently, West Newberry, Massachusetts is a lie. We've heard him booed in Boston. Baltimore, they went nuts. I think somebody's just confused about where John Cena's from. So when Big Show said, I would crush John Cena, the place just rained hate on him. And it wasn't piped in. You could see the people in the background standing up and thumbs down. And just really just raging on Big Show and cheering for Cena. That's when he said he was entering the Money in the Bank match for the WWE Championship. He said there was no one that could stop him from winning the match, and after he won it, when he cashed it in, there was no champion who could keep him from being successful and cashing in that briefcase. He was going to win that championship for me. Again, that's how he put it, kind of calling back to the first part of the promo. At that point, Brodus Clay's music hit. He marches out with the Funkadactyl. No dancing, but the ladies did accompany him to the ring. Clay stands on the floor for a minute, kind of getting ready, hulking up. He jumps in the ring, and Show gets the better of him for a second, but Clay comes right back, hits that big headbutt of his, starts wailing on Show in the corner, but David Otunga runs out, hits a chop block on Brodus on that hurt knee from where Otunga chop blocked him the week before on SmackDown. At that point, Show just kicked at Clay, kicking that leg, that hurt leg, and the crowd got into a seriously, seriously loud "You can't wrestle" chant. I mean, they were. I was really surprised that WWE let it play out as loud as they did to try to push some of that down. They usually hype stuff like that up, but they were all over Show when WWE let it play. Show played to the crowd, and I think that's mostly why they let it go. And then he finally grabbed Clay by his mohawk and hit him with a WMD and knocked him out and left him laying there in the ring. He left the area, and then Otunga talked shit over top of Clay. I hate that guy. I mean, you've got this opportunity to do something. Brodus Clay is laid out in front of you, and David Otunga stunk up the joint on the mic. Even his silly dance, he had him play Brodus's music, and he danced and did like some bastardized version of the Carlton and the dinosaur that Brodus Clay does. But he was terrible. I mean, like, he got no heat off of this. This crowd was so hot for everything. I mean, they were just raging on Big Show, and then Otunga gets the mic, and they die. He was terrible.
That's just kind of what he is, though. I mean, he's just not very charismatic. I mean, he was okay in kind of the stooge role backstage because, all he had to do was hold the coffee cup and say a few sentences. Rarely, and get his ass kicked pretty much constantly in the ring. But, now that they're kind of putting him out there as a featured act, the weaknesses that he has on the microphone are really starting to come through. Because anytime the guy opens his mouth, it's like, he's walking into a vacuum. There's just no reaction for anything he says. And it was glaringly obvious that, just based on what we saw the crowd do for the rest of the segment, that they're just not into this guy. And I don't know if it's the character, I guess it could be, but, he's had this problem his entire WWE career. So, I don't know, they're going to have to do something really inventive to get him some heat.
Yeah, I mean, this is a taped show. They had to, they're sitting there, they let that crowd noise in. They turn it up so that people can hear it, and here this crowd just going crazy over everything Big Show saying, and then, all of a sudden, David Otunga opens his mouth, and it's like he farted in the middle of church. The place just dies and just looks at him. And you would think that they would cut that out. Of course, the flip side is we probably would have got somebody else trying to molest Santino, which was bad enough. Just the one was bad enough, but I won't get there in a minute. But he was terrible, and he didn't seem natural on the mic. Everything seemed forced. I mean, he was awful. But what did you think about Big Show's performance? I thought Show was very good here. I really like. I mean, you're the one that pointed out to me, and I think you're absolutely correct that he's playing Mark Henry's old character. I think he does it better than Henry simply because the mountain of work that Big Show has that he can point to as stupid, and do, you know, going along to get along, you know, getting along to get along. You know, there's so much of it, and it's so over the top. Mark Henry was just the Kool-Aid, you know, smiling Kool-Aid man, which was terrible, but it's not like Big Show with all his outfits and the stupid gimmicks and, you know,
well, he was
the sexual Mayweather.
Chocolate and everything else, too. I mean,
well, yeah, that's true. He did have sex with some. I mean, yeah, some, but it's just, I just think Big Show is able to do it a little bit better because of that past, but at any rate, I think this is working for him. He's not the most compelling character, but they're doing really the best they could with Big Show. He was good against Mark Henry last year, and I thought he benefited from Henry, and I think he's doing okay here. He's never going to be someone that I think is going to sell a ton of tickets. I think he's past that point in his career, but he can still be compelling. I mean, Kane, when he won the world title last year, was not really selling tickets, but for a little while, and then it got, you know, ridiculous. But for the first third of that, he was very compelling, very good. I think Big Show's doing okay here. And let's face it, he drew a lot of heat from that crowd.
Oh, no doubt. No, I think Show's doing an admirable job with the character. I mean, I still don't think he's channeling enough of, you know, his own personal frustration into the character. And maybe he's not as frustrated, you know, as Henry was. At the point in his career that Henry was at last September or whatever. So, I think Big Show is doing fine. I think he's getting heat. I think the character works. You know, I wish Show could draw a little more anger out of himself when he's doing some of these promos. But maybe we'll get to that point. But what they're doing now is definitely working because crowds are reacting to it. So you can't really complain.
What do you think about his promo here?
I thought it was well done. You know, it's interesting that he's declaring himself for Money in the Bank. You know, I think he'll be good in that match. They definitely seem to find spots for the big men in those matches. As Kane's been involved in several of them, and him and Show are both pretty athletic for their size. So I think he'll do well there. And I think Show, while, like I said, he's not channeling a lot of that anger and frustration that Henry was, I think he's kind of bringing his own flavor to this type of character, and he's kind of doing the loner route, which is interesting, and we'll have to see how he moves into his next major feud. I think it's easy for people to get the kind of heat that Show gets when he's beating the crap out of Cena, but it might not be that easy with a character that fans are less into.
Yeah, I thought he was. I gave it a hit in my head. I thought he was more than effective here. And you answered my next question was going to be, what do you think about him with Money in the Bank? And yeah, I think they're going to find something for him to do. I think he's going to be interesting. They always seem to want to have a big guy there to be kind of the bottom for everybody else and, a base for them to kind of work on. And I think Show has shown many times in the past that he can be that guy to do certain things to allow some of the smaller guys to get ridiculous. He's shown an ability to do that. I think he's doing good stuff right now. At least the best they could get out of him. He's not the most compelling thing. I think they could do more with other people that would be better. But once you've accepted he's going to be, you know, a feature act for a while, at least top of the card for a little bit, or near the top of the card, I think they're doing all they can with him. It's so much better than, you know, happy giant Big Show or just crazy giant Big Show. It's more controlled and whatnot. I'm happy with what he's doing right now. He's doing okay. Like I said, it could be a whole lot worse. After commercial, oh God, first match of the night, Frank Venezia and Jared Watler. It's spelled Watchler, because I had to go back and pause it just to make sure, but it's spelled Watchler, but apparently it's pronounced Watler or Watler or something like that. These two guys were killed by Ryback. I didn't even see what their gimmick was. because I went back to spell the names correctly and started to watch it on DVR and then went, no, I don't care. I don't care. They're going to say something to make the crowd mad. Baltimore's already hot. There's no reason to watch it. Ryback comes out, kills him in a minute and 42 seconds for your first match. Crowd was hot for Ryback. Somebody tweeted, I can't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted, you know, it was in our forum, I think it was, .NET member Angela said, he went to SmackDown and, I think it was him, it might have been somebody else, but he went to SmackDown and the crowd was crazy for Ryback, so I guess his gimmick's working. And I think it's probably, as I wrote in my report, I bet it's impressive as hell live. I have no doubt that in the arena, if I saw it live, I'd probably be like, wow, look at that. But it's dead on TV, I think. I don't think it's getting over on television, do you?
It's hard to say. I mean, I guess we can only gauge, you know, our own opinions, and you know, we can gauge the live reaction, which I guess seems to be okay. But, you know, I think it'd be a lot easier to get into an act like that live, just because it's fun to watch somebody get the piss knocked out of them in person in a squash match, and I think Ryback is the perfect character for that. But they really haven't given us a whole, you know, a whole lot of interesting stuff to chew on for a television viewer. I think, you know, the reason that they do all these advanced storylines and soap opera kind of antics is because, you know, wrestling is only so compelling to a TV audience, and so you have to introduce drama. And I don't think he's bringing anything to the table that helps with that. You know, he might get over with the kids because, you know, they enjoy watching people just get beat up. But I think if you're, you know, wanting to please a more mature audience, he's going to have to do something more interesting. And I just, you know, I don't care about it anymore. I'm kind of in the same camp as you are. You know, if I wasn't covering the show, I'd probably fast forward through it or hit pause and go do something else and come back and watch the rest of the show. I just have no interest in watching these continued squash matches. At the pay-per-view, he was screaming, "Feed me three." So if they're going to move to, you know, if their answer to the critics of this character is to get him another guy to beat up, I just don't think they get it.
And the crowd was chanting, "Feed me more" with him. And, I mean, they were really into his act. And you know, like you said, it's easier to get into it live. And I bet it is just, you know, amazing live. And the "feed me more" is not necessarily in relation to adding another jobber guy. My only concern with Ryback, and I've said this a number of times, is he's beating guys, you know, he's beating who? What were those guys' names again? I mean, you won't remember them. Most of the time, we don't even catch it, and we'll just put Ryback beats two jobbers, and nobody ever complains, because it doesn't, you know, he's not beating people that matter. And, you know, when you've got other guys out there, Damian Sandow, for example, who was, you know, beating up guys you've at least heard of, it's different. Like, yeah, we know he's a beast and he can do all these things, but he's throwing around, you know, these common Joes. And I do think it has reached a point where people are willing to transition that over and say, okay, I bet he will just, you know, kill a Tyson Kidd or a Zack Ryder or whatever, a Heath Slater. But it's time to do that. I'm not saying he necessarily has to move into a serious feud. He's beating two guys who combined weigh as much as one WWE superstar. I think it's just going to get, and he's getting more Goldberg chance. Baltimore was kind to him, but he is getting more Goldberg chance wherever he goes. I just think it's time that they move on, and he doesn't have to necessarily show any vulnerability. He can have squash feuds with people where he just goes out and then, you know, kills somebody and then, well, I'm going to try again, and he kills him a second time and then he moves on. I'm not saying you push him into the title picture, but he's got to evolve, and he's got to evolve soon. I just don't think it's getting over on television. I really don't think it's getting over great live. And so people are going, look at that crowd. How can you say it's not getting over? It was great in Baltimore for those people that night. Me watching at home, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders. He's an impressive individual. But enough, you know, give us a reason to care.
He needs
to start communicating in some way. I agree. You know, I think manager is probably the way to go. Who would you put him with? Would you put him with AW? I think they're trying to set him up as a babyface. That's why they keep having these you know, enhancement talent cut these really, you know, local heat generating promos, like when they were in Louisiana and had to talk about Alabama. So they're obviously trying to send him as a babyface. So who's out there that they could put him?
I'm not sure. The manager role is so diminished. We have AW and Vicky, but they're both heels at the moment, and so it's difficult to find somebody who you could put them with that would make sense. And Teddy Long, maybe? I mean, I don't know. He's not really doing much, and it doesn't seem like they're going to put him immediately back in the GM role. So maybe they could stick him with Ryback, but I really don't know. AW seems logical to me because the Ryback character seems so well tuned to become a heel, but that's just me.
They could have a lot of fun with AW and put him with AW and have him be killing people for AW, and AW be the heel, but he's just he doesn't cheat. He just wrestles. He's just he's just a badass. And then down the road, the payoff on an AW, have him, slaps him or something. You know what I'm saying? Just does something to go after him. And, you think he's just going to take it because he's AW's lackey, and he snaps and goes off on AW and kills the primetime players. That would make me happy.
yeah, it's similar to what they did with Lesnar and Heyman when Lesnar kind of did his face turn while Heyman was still the heel manager. So,
Yeah, it's that sort of thing. So, but yeah, they got to do something with him soon. I'm bored with it. It's like, yes, I know he can throw people around, but I'm bored. At that point, we go backstage. Mick Foley's there. He says, thank you to Yoshitatsu in Japanese, and then did interpret himself. So, and Yoshi goes, yes, I know, I'm Japanese. This whole segment was bizarre. So if you didn't watch it and you're listening to it and you're thinking, did Shore have a stroke? What he's saying doesn't make any sense. I know. He didn't make any sense when I was watching it. So at that point, Vicky Guerrero walks up, and she chases Tatsu off. He calls her an old witch. Foley lies to her and says that old witches are highly revered in Japanese culture. Vicky then tells him that she's going to be the GM next week, and so she'll make him her assistant, because he has to see Vicky for something. I kind of got lost on this because it was all just so weird. Vicky says, you better be careful. I'll make you my assistant next week. And he goes, well, actually, I think that I got a better person for you. And Kali comes in dancing to his music, and Vicky storms off mad, and then Foley and Kali dance into the commercial. What the hell was it? Like, I thought I had had a stroke. I thought I was, somebody had flipped me some acid somewhere, and suddenly I'm having a bad trip. It was just bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't get it at all. I like Foley and Vicky both individually. I think they have their moments, but this was just really bizarre. The Kali thing at the end, I don't know. They've had him dancing at various different times on Superstars, and he appeared on NXT dancing and prior to this new NXT rollout. So I guess that's his gimmick. I don't know. But the whole, they seem to be just trying to find convoluted ways to bring in the old general managers leading up to the 1,000th Raw episode. I think they're going to have one general manager a week for the next, what is it, how many, 4 weeks until the 1,000th Raw?
Something like that, yeah.
So I think this is probably going to end up being that. So probably just end up doing some kind of weird transitional thing. And this was their idea for this week, and it was terrible.
And it was just strange. Everything about it just was surreal and really bizarre. It really wasn't. What the hell was that moment? Very frustrating. After commercial, Daniel Bryan's favorite Raw moment was Marty Jannetty showing up from the crowd and defeating Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental Championship in 1993, as he put it, after Raw had been on only about 5 months. So he goes back early in the Raw run to find his favorite moment. Ricardo Rodriguez introduces Alberto Del Rio, Christian out next for our second match of the night. Alberto Del Rio defeating Christian at 10 minutes and 59 seconds. Finish on this comes with, there was a lot of back and forth in this match, and Christian hit the pendulum kick in the corner to knock Del Rio down. He jumps up to the top rope. Ricardo jumps up on the apron and then jumps down. He never touches him, doesn't really do anything, shove him down or anything like that. Just takes a moment and distracts Christian. Del Rio recovers, hits his step up into the gurry off of that top rope where Christian was, and then hooked in that cross-arm breaker of his for a submission win on the Intercontinental Champion, not an Intercontinental title match. an 11-minute match here. I'm going to let you go first on this one. What did you think of this match? Because I was very critical of it. What did you think?
You know, I thought Del Rio did a nice job of, you know, focusing on the arm. I think he does that well, you know, in all of his matches, really, to, you know, he really has kind of directed offense, and it makes sense, you know, with his finisher and everything. So they did a nice job of incorporating a lot of those arm spots, but I just didn't think it was a very well-wrestled match, to be honest with you. It was, you know, the crowd was hot for it, and I think, you know, they had some good moments in there, but it just felt kind of sloppy, and maybe you had the same impression I did based on what you just said, but it was, to me, it just, I don't know, it just didn't light my fire as much as I hoped it would.
I didn't like the story that they told. It seemed that the entire match, I mean, after you got through kind of the preliminary stuff, the entire match was Christian misses a move, allowing Del Rio to, I mean, sometimes we'll have a couple of reversals, but ultimately Christian comes out on the short end, allowing Del Rio to hit a move or two for a near fall or a big impact on the arm or something like that. And then Del Rio would set up for something else. Christian would fight back out of that, you know, for a hope spot, and then immediately miss another move, and we would start the cycle all over. Like, it was just that over and over and over. Christian would screw up, Del Rio would capitalize for just a second, and then Christian would screw up again, and then Del Rio would capitalize for just a second, and then Christian would screw up. And it just kept going. I mean, that's great for, you know, for the boom, boom, boom at the end, but I, you know, for the whole match, we really like six, seven minutes of this match was that series over and over. And I know they were trying to make Christian look good in defeat, but I think it hurt both guys in the match and just kind of left you flat when it was over. The crowd was hot for it, and they made it a little bit better than it was. But I don't like what they tried to do. I mean, I thought they did what they wanted to do, but I didn't like what they were trying to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get where you're going with that. I guess that part of it didn't bother me as much as the, I don't know, it just seemed like there were a lot of points in the match where, I don't know if there was miscommunication or what was going on, but it seemed like one of the two guys would get kind of lost in the ring, and then they'd have to regroup, and I think that might have been feeding into, you know, what you were talking about it seemed like they were repeating the same series, because it never really felt like they were, you know, that they had much chemistry going on there. It seemed like they were constantly resetting in the ring, and there were a couple of points where they had missed spots and whatnot, too, so. I don't know. It just wasn't a very good outing for either guy, and I think both of our opinions reflect that.
Yeah, it's a shame. Both guys have had great matches in the past that we've really been high on, and it was just one of the past couple of years, and it's weird to watch them go out and have a stinker. Everybody has a bad night. I'm not, you know, Christian and Del Rio are not useless. It's just not a good night for them. And then we get a post-match attack. This really bothered me. Cody Rhodes runs out, attacks Christian, locked in an arm hold, kind of reaching the arm back, a lot like the arm hold that Brock Lesnar used to quote unquote bring Triple H's arm. And Christian, who's just tapped out to that arm being brutalized by Del Rio, hulks out of it, stands up, powers out of it, looks like, you know, he's got this hope spot with Cody, he's getting ready to come back and attack Cody. Cody hits him with a knee lift and then slams that same shoulder into the post, and that's all Christian could do at that point. He just slumped in the corner. But, I mean, he just tapped out to that arm being hurt, and now he's going to no-sell Cody Rhodes? And that was the plan. It's not, I'm not, you know, being mad at Christian here. That's what he was told to do. Who the hell who thinks that's a good idea?
I'm not sure. It would have made a whole lot more sense when he was caught in the arm bar just to, you know, tap. I mean, and wait for the ref to separate him. I think that would have done more for Cody than what ended up happening with him. I think he ended up yelling at Christian that he was using his time or stealing his time, and SmackDown was his show and whatnot after he threw him into the corner. But, I mean, I think it would have made a whole lot of sense if he would have refused to break the hold and the refs would have had to intervene, and then they, you know, if the refs were pulling him off, he could have been screaming at Christian. And I think that would have been a more impactful segment. The whole thing, I mean, not only was it nonsensical, but it ended up coming off flat because, you know, when Cody was yelling, Christian wasn't even making eye contact with him, and no registration that he was even hearing him, stuff like that. So even from a dramatic standpoint, it was just kind of a strange kind of few minutes there.
Yeah, that was, I was going to say, that was the second offense. It was Christian was, I mean, he ended up on his back still. So why go through the hope spot just to have him end up on his back? And like you said, he's knocked out pretty much so from the post shot, and Cody's yelling at him. Like, you know, why not have him sit there and tap, tap, tap to get a bunch of referees come out, pull him off, and he's screaming over top of them while they're pulling him back. This is my show. You're taking up my time just like you did. It would have been better. A swing and a miss there from Cody Rhodes. I forgot to put that in on my misses, but I may have to go back and amend my hip miss. It was so bad I tried to block it from memory, I guess. After commercial, we get a video recap of what we just saw, and then the WWE title feud with AJ and everything, kind of a recap of all that. Kane made his ring entrance, and after commercial, AJ was introduced as the special timekeeper. She sat at ringside with the bell. Bryan was out next for our third match of the night. Kane defeating Daniel Bryan at 7 minutes and 12 seconds. Pretty basic paint by the numbers match for the majority of the match, but the finish on it comes. Bryan hooks the yes lock on Kane in the middle of the ring. Kane struggles and finally makes it to the rope, or he's just close enough to be able to reach the rope, and as he's reaching out, grasping for it, the bell rings. AJ rings the bell. Bryan jumps up, begins to celebrate. The referee looks out, says, you know, I didn't call for the bell. What are you doing? And AJ's like, oh, I'm sorry, and, you know, that sort of thing. And the referee tells Bryan, I didn't call for the bell. She screwed up. This match goes on. Bryan says, okay, goes for the drop kick in the corner. Kane moves and follows with a choke slam for the pinfall victory. And AJ looks very satisfied at ringside with what has happened before skipping to the back, leaving both men in the ring. She continues to be the best stuff on television each week. This had a fun finish, but the match was just kind of, they seem to be, let's go out here and do some stuff until we get to go home. And that's all they seem to really care about in the match.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression that I got out of it too. I think the way the finish went down, and Kane was kind of reaching for the ropes, but he did it kind of rapidly and ended up slapping the mat a couple of times, so it looked like he was like beginning to tap out, and that's when she rang the bell. I think that's what they were going for there. I don't know if it was clear on television the way it played out, but you know, the match itself was just kind of like you said, pretty much what we've seen from these guys before. They didn't really do anything new here. And I guess you can't really expect them to I think we're all expecting Punk and Kane and Bryan to be involved in another pay-per-view match. But, yeah, it was pretty, you know, mediocre until we got to the finish, which was pretty fun. And like you said, AJ continues to be, kind of the most exciting and compelling character they have. You know, she's just, she's unpredictable and that's what makes her great. So, I'm still liking this feud, and I still like everybody involved in it and what they're doing. But this match just kind of felt like you said, it was put together just to kill time, so they could get to the point where AJ was going to make her presence felt.
What do you think the payoff is for this?
Yes, it's hard to say. I mean, I didn't expect what we got at the last pay per view. I thought she was going to play a larger part in that match, and she really didn't until, you know, the very end. But, it was, I'm expecting at some point Bryan to end up with the title here, and I think it'll be, perhaps at this pay-per-view. Because I think they're going to have Punk, you know, chasing Bryan for his rematch. Or maybe Punk will have Bryan will have the Money in the Bank briefcase for SummerSlam. One of those two things. I'm not entirely sure which direction they're going.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm beginning to think more and more she ends up with Kane. That Vince McMahon went, God dang it, let's put the crazy chick with the crazy guy. I just have that feeling. I don't want to be right, but that's what I think right now. So, but yeah, good. I mean, like I said, the ending was fun. She played it up really well at the end, smirking and looking at Daniel Bryan and like she did it on purpose and whatnot. And, then skipping back to the ring and, or back to the back. And there you go. Not a special match, like we both said. They got the finish. The finish was cute and fun, and we'll continue to watch her. And the crowd was really hot. Like, they were cheering Kane. They were really booing Bryan a lot too. I was surprised at how much he got. I didn't hear a lot of yes chants. Did you?
Didn't hear many. No, it was pretty. They're pretty vocally against him, which I guess is a testament to how he's managed to fight through the attempted face turn at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I don't think they were all that excited for Kane as much as it was he was facing Bryan, and so they hated Bryan, and they were going to cheer for Kane, and I think they like AJ, and could be a lot of fun stuff. I did a podcast for someone else last night, and I just wanted to get your thought on this. If she does end up with Kane, could you see a Joker-Harley Quinn relationship working out for those two?
Kane is just so much different than the Joker.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's hard to imagine him assuming that role. I mean, he's not really the cerebral mastermind. I mean, he's much more of a scarecrow type Batman villain than a Joker villain. But definitely, I mean, if you want to imagine AJ channeling anybody, it's Harley Quinn. So I guess I can see her fulfilling that role, but I would much be more inclined to see Brian, you know, take on that Joker type role that Kane would be.
That could be fun. That could be fun too. Yeah, she's so good right now. It shows you right there how good she is that we can just kind of put her in a bunch of different places and find a lot of stuff for her. So, Mick Foley makes his ring entrance after the commercial break. He did his cheap pop gimmick right here in Baltimore, Maryland. And when they showed him, he seemed to be kind of right here in Baltimore, Maryland, a little bit. And from what our correspondent said, he actually had to do that line twice. Two takes to get it right, and that's probably why he looked like that, because he was frustrated with himself for, I don't know if he said the wrong name of the town or if he just fumbled over it or whatever, but he seemed frustrated. Heath Slater's music hit almost immediately. Slater comes to the ring, complains about Cyndi Lauper and Roddy Piper embarrassing him. Foley said there was no reason to be embarrassed because Cyndi Lauper was a tough chick. But that his opponents tonight might embarrass him. Zack Ryder's music hit. He comes out to an unbelievable reaction from the crowd. And our fourth match tonight, Zack Ryder defeats Heath Slater in a minute and 14 seconds. This was total garbage filler BS, but Baltimore was happy as hell to see Zack Ryder.
Yeah, and that was nice to see. You know, he hasn't really been a featured act for a couple of months now, ever since that Kane storyline really... I don't know if people lost faith in him or if it was, if they just didn't have anything planned for him after that or what's going on. But I think crowds are still into him. And, every time his name is mentioned, especially on the East Coast, he definitely gets a major reaction. So they got to find something for Ryder to do. And you know, the Intercontinental and U.S. titles, I guess Christian is doing a decent job with the IC title, but that U.S. title seems like it would just be right for him. I mean, Santino's not doing anything with it. Just find something for that guy to do. If he can get this reaction, it's a heck of a lot better than, what Santino's getting week after week.
Yeah, I as I wrote in my report, it is a crime. I mean a legitimate crime that this guy worked so hard to get himself over, and now they've taken over his show, and he doesn't get to do what he wants to do now. It's all going to be approved. And, they're not using him right on television. They've really done this guy crooked, I think. I mean, I just don't think they've been very fair to him. He got himself over. He did what they're all told to do, take initiative, come up with something for yourself. He did. It paid off, but then they seem to be pissed that they didn't have anything to do with it. And they're just, I don't know that that's the reason why. It's not right what they're doing to this kid. It really frustrates me. But maybe things are looking up a little bit. He's going to be fodder, certainly, if I'm right about this next thing, but at least it will make you put him on TV for a little bit. After the commercial, Foley and Ryder were shown walking around backstage talking. They bump into Damian Sandow, who was wearing a suit this week instead of his ring gear. Sandow said that he kind of ran them both down and called Ryder Ryder was the guy leading the charge of idiocy, I believe is what he said. Said that, Ryder had been doing that for some time, but no more. He stepped away and then stuck his head right back in and gave the you're welcome bit, turned around and walked off. All he said, well, have a nice day, and the crowd popped big for that. I think Sandow versus Ryder could be very entertaining. I hope they let both of them go on the mic, because I think Ryder's big goofy ass and Sandow's character could be hilarious and compelling together.
Yeah, it really does seem like it could be very interesting. And, Sandow, I think, is, really quickly established himself on the microphone, as somebody who could probably go out there and talk with anybody. And Ryder is, just the dopey jock type who, is just the perfect foil for him. So I think this is an excellent choice for a first feud for Sandow, and it is going to get Ryder, you know, on television doing something more interesting than, you know, either getting punched off the cage by the Big Show or wrestling in these one-minute squash matches. So anything that moves both of these guys forward is good for me.
And I think Ryder, I mean, obviously Ryder would be the guy taking the loss here, would be my guess, and certainly the way that I would book it. But I think they can do it. I don't have faith that they will, but I think that they can do it in a way that Ryder would actually come out of, even with the loss, would be able to come out of this with some development in his character and be interesting, more interesting. I think they could, this could be a synergy type situation where, you know, one guy wins and one guy loses on the mat, but both guys actually come out of it better than they were before. It can happen, folks. I know you don't see it very often in WWE, but it can happen. We get a video of AW turning on Primo and Epico and joining the primetime players. The Usos make their ring entrance next, and they do the big dance thing that they do, and usually that is over everywhere. Not in Baltimore. Baltimore loved a lot of stuff tonight, but they didn't seem to care much about the Usos, did they?
Sure didn't seem like it. Yeah, it was deathly quiet in that arena, and I'm not sure why. You know, I think in person that'd be probably kind of pretty neat to watch.
Yeah, and it's been hot everywhere they've been. I mean, people come out and suddenly you get a little cheer, but then when they get going, people get, you know, wound up and cheer for them. But Baltimore just did not seem to care about tag teams tonight. Primetime Players out next for our fifth match of the night. Primetime Players defeating the Usos 3:14. You pretty much hooked everybody in the ring pretty quickly, and Jey Uso, I believe it was in the ring with Titus O'Neil. He goes to the top rope for a splash, but AW distracts the ref, allowing Darren Young to knock him down. Titus hits his kind of pop-up sit-out powerbomb that he does, his finisher for the victory there for those guys. And then the announce team set up the trailer for No Holds Barred, which is now being re-released on DVD after being digitally remastered and all that. Tag match was what it was. It wasn't bad. It was a pretty good match, but they seemed to be more interested in the tag matches or in tag teams. But at this point in the show especially, you've told me for months, for years, tag teams don't matter. And now I'm listening. Don't be mad that I listened to what you told me. You know, they're going to have to do some work to make me care about the tag division.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I guess I personally never really lost my interest in tag team wrestling. I've always enjoyed it, but they definitely killed the momentum of just about every tag team in their company. I mean, I'm glad that they're putting some focus on it, but it's going to take some time for, I think, everybody, you know, ourselves included, to really get plugged back into WWE tag team wrestling. And I hope they stick with it. You know, I don't want them to give up on it halfway through like they seem to do with just about everything. But it's definitely going to be a struggle to make these teams feel important. But I think they're off to a halfway decent start. I mean, they do seem to be actually writing a storyline for this. So I'm glad about that. Was it just me or was No Holds Barred exponentially worse than you remembered it? Just watching that trailer, I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah,
I was kind of...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I watched that movie as a kid, and I was fairly young when it came out. I think I was probably 10 or something. And, I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan at the time, so, that movie was awesome to me. And I just look at it now, and it's like, holy crap, you know. It didn't help that they kind of ripped on it throughout the trailer, but it was hilariously bad.
Yeah, it was... Just real quick about the tag match, I didn't lose my interest in tag team wrestling. I just refused to get invested in tag team wrestling in WWE until they prove that they're serious about it. And they don't have to main event a pay-per-view. I'll never expect that in WWE, but, you know, give me a few more weeks and I'll come around. It's just hard for me to get invested because I know they're trying to burn me again. Yeah, the No Holds Barred thing, as I wrote in my report, it's so bad. And if you think you know how bad it is, just remember that the bad guy in No Holds Barred, Zeus is the big, you know, the evil character, the big giant wrestler guy, but the mind behind it, that guy is now that really weird corner that plays, you know, is the role he plays on Psych for people who like Psych, I mean, he's Woody, and, you know, that's your evil character, is a guy who now, you know, eats sardine sandwiches while he's cutting up dead people as his character. I mean, it's just, you know, it's, and he plays that character so perfectly, you just go, how could this guy be the evil genius? It is a rough, rough, rough movie. It's, you know, if you're in a mood to laugh, it's probably worth getting because it is funny. As Josh Matthews said, it was funny when it's not meant to be. There were clips in there that when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I had forgotten about that. This movie is worse than I thought. So yeah, I agree with you that the remembering of it was a whole lot better than apparently the actual work itself.
Yeah, that's one of those, you know, Hulk Hogan drinking game kind of things where you just get a bunch of buddies together and see which one of you cannot die watching that movie from whatever drinking game you set up, because, you know, it's just awful. But we'll have to do a .NET DVD review of that masterpiece at some point.
Oh, God. We should get everybody together on the conference call and do the Hulk Hogan drinking game.
Yeah, exactly. Hilarious.
It's funny because I just panned the tag team division, or at least as far as WWE's treatment of the tag team division, and after the commercial they come back and they do something to actually hook me that made me actually sit up and go, oh, really? And it was very simple. You had AW and the Primetime Players walking backstage kind of celebrating. Primo, Epico, and Rosa walk up. They're freaking out, yelling at him. AW mounts back, and Primo pops him dead in the mouth. I mean, just totally caught me off guard, punched him dead in the face, stiffed him in the mouth, and I don't say he stiffed him, he didn't say potato him, but it just came out of nowhere, pops him right in the mouth. They end up in a pull-apart brawl. The referees pull the Primo and Epico back, and the other guys make their escape, and it was kind of cheesy with the refs holding them back at the end. That was a kind of a weak visual. But that was it. Everything else about this I thought was great. It was just chaos with the yelling, and then he punches them, and then they end up in the floor. I mean, it looked real. It looked legit. Really, it was the best tag team moment in WWE in probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it was really good. I enjoyed this segment quite a bit. It's interesting that, it doesn't take much. You know, this is one of those quintessential pro wrestling segments where, you know, all it took was, two people mouthing off for just a few seconds and then a punch in the mouth. And then, it sucks you right into the television. So I thought it was pretty good the way it all played out. And I'm just happy that they're actually putting some effort into these two teams, because it seems like, once they get them built up, we're going to see, a pretty decent tag match out of these two, because I think they're both teams are fairly talented in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great moment. I mean, it was kind of a mark-out moment a little bit for me. I mean, it happened, and I even out loud, all by myself, watched the spectacle. I went, oh, shit, he punched him in the face. I mean, it came out of nowhere, and it shows you how simple, I mean, that was as simple as you could do, and it worked, and I thought it was a great moment. But then the wheels come off. Santino Marella makes his ring entrance, and he did kind of one of these house show type, moments, like the kiss cam and that sort of thing, where he comes out, let's see the best sign. And so they show a bunch of different signs, and he reads them, with his terrible English. And then he finds a sign, a woman saying, I heart Santino. And so he says, wait, bring her over. I want to meet her. And so she runs over and climbs over the gate. He starts, security, I did not know she was coming, security. And all that sort of stuff. And she gets in the ring. She's wearing, it's a woman. She's larger than him. Not a little bit. I don't make thoughts. She has, like they love to do with the Collie Kiss Cam when they get some big fat girl with a mole. This lady was just kind of taller than Santino. And of course, she was in, heels or whatever. And she had on Santino's T-shirts, the T-shirt that looks kind of like a robe or whatever, the kimono. And she's got the I Heart Santino sign. She's got a cobra sock on her arm. And Santino, she gets in the ring, and she's all excited and screaming and stuff. And her cobra and his cobra do a kiss. The two cobras kiss each other. Santino's laughing about it. She grabs his head and then just proceeds to essentially lick his face. It was supposed to be a kiss, but the dude, honest to God, had lipstick up his nose, like it was up on the bridge part of his nose. So really, she just smeared her lips all over his face. She lets go. He stood there for a minute and then kind of took a Ric Flair-esque, just, you know, standstill back bump. He just, you know, fell down, knocked out, you know, grinning like an idiot, eyes staring off blankly. And then we went to commercial. That was it. I have no idea why. I have no idea what the purpose was. I don't know if we're setting up for something long term. I don't know if they were like, holy crap, we're 4 minutes short. We need to record something. I don't know. But what the hell was it, Jake?
I cannot explain it to you, man.
Oh, God, dang it. I was hoping you had something.
Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. And it felt like one of those house show segments, like you said. And I think for future reference, it should probably stay a house show segment just because it didn't play well on television. And, you know, I'm sure live crowds get a kick out of that stuff. But, I mean, it definitely wasn't a very good use of TV time. I don't think I don't think it did anything for Santino, and I'm sure it was a thrill for that lady if she wasn't a plant, but it just came off kind of, I don't know. It was camp comedy, but it didn't really make anybody laugh that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it wasn't as bizarre as the Mick Foley, Kali, Yoshitatsu, all Vicky. It wasn't as surreal as that moment, but it was pretty close. I mean, because it just ended. I have no idea what they're doing with this, and just strange stuff on SmackDown this week. After commercial, we get a recap of CM Punk's appearance on Jimmy Fallon. He seemed to, they played him up pretty well there and had a big time out there for that. And Dolph Ziggler was out next, followed by Sheamus. Sheamus got a ridiculous pop from that ridiculously hot crowd. But our sixth and final match of the night, your main event, Sheamus defeating Dolph Ziggler with Vicky Guerrero at 12 minutes and 25 seconds. The finish on this is just Sheamus hitting a bro kick out of nowhere. The story of this match is that it was so much better than I thought it was going to be. They gave us a different match than we saw at the pay-per-view. It did not feel stale in the least. They said they did different stuff. Ziggler got in a lot of offense this time, right before they went to commercial break, Sheamus hit a fall-away slam with Ziggler hitting the barricade on the floor. That made me cringe. I went back and kind of watched it again and watched it from a technical standpoint and thought, wow, it probably didn't hurt as bad as even, you know, I thought it did. But, oh, man, Ziggler can flat. I tweeted in the middle of the match, or right after that commercial break, he's the bestseller alive today. And if you disagree, I don't want to hear it because you're wrong. It's not about opinions. It's just the fact. He is the best alive today. And he looked great there, but he had a lot of offense in here tonight. They told a different story, kind of a surprise with the finish, the bro kick out of nowhere. I hate to see Ziggler lose again. That frustrates me more than anything. But, wow, what a great match. If Baltimore was really hot.
Yeah, I have to agree. It was just a pleasure to watch. And I think Sheamus actually did a pretty good job of selling for Ziggler's offense, too, especially that rocker dropper on the outside from the...
Yeah, that was great.
When Ziggler snuck up on him when Vicky was interfering, that was a spectacular looking move too. So I thought both guys did a really great job here, and it was, you know, they managed to, you know, make the finish seem less expected in this match than I think they did at the pay per view. So I actually enjoyed this match quite a bit, and I think it's it exceeded expectations. They did a really good job of building towards the finish, and it's I really don't know if Ziggler, you know, loses anything necessarily in these matches. I mean, he has so much to gain just by continuing to push the world champion to the limit. And I think we're going to see, you know, the payoff at Money in the Bank for this. I think we're going to see him win a briefcase.
Yeah, my fear with him getting the briefcase is him being the first guy to lose it, you know, to lose cashing in. I think they're wanting to pull that trigger sooner rather than later. And it concerns me. It does. But hopefully not. Hopefully he is the winner and he is able to cash in successfully at that point. We'll have to wait and see. It was a good, we had good opening. We see this a lot with SmackDown. We talk about this all the time. I call it a bookend SmackDown. The opening segment was good. The main event was good. Everything else in between, for the most part, kind of not so great. So not a good show, but it did leave you going home happy with that match. It was a very exciting match, and if you haven't seen it, I do suggest going out of your way to see it, Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler. But not really a newsworthy show, Jake, other than Big Show announcing he was going to be in Money in the Bank. Not a lot here. They didn't seem to be building towards anything. It mostly, other than Big Show, this seems like, and Clay and Otunga, I guess, is kind of periphery. The tag teams with Primo and Epico punching AW and all that. But everything else seemed to be just kind of, you know, keep it where it is thing. Even Cody's attack on Christian didn't advance anything. It just seemed to be a water treading version of SmackDown this week.
Yeah, it just kind of seems like they're going to be carrying forward these existing stories probably until they start, you know, really building for SummerSlam. So, you know, maybe another couple, 3 weeks of TV, probably going to be similar to this. I can't see them starting anything really exciting right now. I mean, they have the Lesnar and Triple H stuff that they've kind of started for SummerSlam. But really, we're just kind of coasting to the next show, or excuse me, the next pay-per-view, you know, on these same stories, and then we'll probably start building after that for SummerSlam. So it could be a pretty boring 3 or 4 weeks of television.
Ooh, I hope not, but even if it is, Jake and I will be back next week, probably with a SmackDown audio review. I'm going to go ahead and stick in my plug here real fast. If I'm not here next Saturday, it will be because next Saturday night I am hosting the first ever iPay-per-view by Pro Wrestling Evo. It's a independent company here in Concord, North Carolina. They've got a lot of heart and a lot of talent, and it has been a joy watching them. I was a part of them as a reporter, just kind of chronicling everything they were doing, and ended up coming on board, and I quit since quit writing about them, but work for them now, and they are holding their first high pay-per-view event live and in stereo Saturday night, June 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central. It's $1.99, folks, so if you want to check it out, evoondemand.com. There'll be more stuff on the site this week getting as we lead into that. You'll put up the card and whatnot, and but just remind people about it. And there'll be reminders on Saturday as well. Jake, you're going to actually cover the show that night, correct?
Yes, I am.
So that should be a lot of fun. I appreciate Jake taking coverage that night and telling us how we do. It'd be interesting to get an outside opinion from it from somebody who does this a lot. So if you guys are interested, again, $1.99 Evo on Demand next Saturday night. So I may be back next week with audio. Not sure yet, but we will let you guys know as soon as we get it all figured out. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to get access to all the audio we give you every week, the Raw review, the Impact Wrestling review, Q&A from Jason, .NET countdowns from Jake and Will, audio slants from me, and, of course, .NET Weekly with Jason and I every Thursday, all you got to do is head over to ProWrestling.net now. Click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. $7.50 will get you your first 30 days, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. You get all that audio and you get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, .NET member blog section. Great value for your guys' dollars. Thank you so much for your continued support of ProWrestling.net. We will see you back here next time, everyone. Have a great weekend. Take care.